Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Aaron Gaffney. Aaron is a compassionate grief coach dedicated to helping individuals navigate the challenging journeys of loss. Originally from Charlotte, North Carolina, Aaron now resides in Abbeville, South Carolina with her partner, Damarin, and their two cats, Tatum and Hobbs. Aaron, welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast. I've been looking forward to our conversation for some time now.
Me too. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited about this.
You're welcome. And I found you. You did a podcast with Jen Levin a little while back. And I was intrigued because your journey is something unique to my podcast. I haven't had anybody with quite the unique journey that you've had. I listened to the podcast that you did with Jen. I loved your energy. I loved what your content. I loved what you've been doing since transcending your own tragedies. And I reached out to you and am grateful that you accepted the invitation to come on the podcast.
Yes, I'm excited to be here. And I'm so glad you invited me. And thank you for the beautiful work that you do. I'm very inspired by you.
Well, thank you. And I'm inspired by the work that you're doing, particularly with Twinless Twins. And we're going to be talking more about that down the road. But first question I have for you is, tell our audience about the experience or experiences that have shaped your life path and your life passions today.
So there's a lot going on there, but I'll just give a few points that led me to where I am today. I came to a place of wanting to help others and their grief after many years of navigating my own. My childhood was marked by challenges, alcohol addiction, mental illness within the family, parents who often did their best were deeply self-absorbed. And among my siblings, I just felt chaotic and fragmented, lots of fighting going on, just very chaotic childhood. And then fast forward to when I was 23, my twin sister, Sarah, was killed in a tragic car accident involving a police officer. For the next two decades, I struggled to face the loss. At first, I was very numb, like you typically would be with traumatic experience. Later, I turned to alcohol and constant socializing to avoid the pain, anything I could do to avoid facing it. I lacked the support that I needed. My parents often sought the spotlight, and aftermath of Sarah's death, there was a big legal battle with the city, and I just felt very much pushed into her shadow, unseen in my own grief and misunderstood by those around me. But then 6 years ago, my mother passed away from cancer, and her death reopened the wounds of losing Sarah, forcing me to confront the grief I had carried for so long. That journey has shaped my desire to create space for others to honor their pain, their healing, and their resilience. And about a year and a half ago, I started to get my certifications in grief coaching and education.
Yeah, that's quite a journey. Now, Sarah was 23 years old. How many years has it been since Sarah's death?
25.
Interestingly, when you told me you were cast into the shadows, it sounds like your grief didn't have an opportunity to be expressed with those around you. I'm sure, Aaron, you've heard this with other siblings who have lost a sibling, whether it's a twin or brother or sister. It's basically they talk about their grief being disenfranchised, is that everybody is concerned about how the parents are doing, and that basically their grief is not acknowledged. It sounds like, am I correct that that was kind of what was going on with you?
Very much so. I think it happens doubly so for twins, and then the other siblings get even pushed further down the line. There was a lot of focus put on my parents. It feels like everybody is in their own little world and we're all repelling each other.
Well, plus with the other challenges you had going on in the home too, I'm sure that made your grief more complicated and the grief of everybody else around more complicated.
Yes.
In my pre-chat notes in our introductory conversation, you explained not dealing with your grief over your sister until your mother's death. How was your mother's death specifically a catalyst for that? What happened that kind of just opened up the floodgates for you to deal with Sarah?
It's funny. I think there's a lot of things going on there. There are a lot of things contributing to what led to a big mental breakdown for me at the time. I was drinking a lot and in an abusive relationship, which made me more vulnerable. There's a lot to sort out around my mother's death, which was very overwhelming. It really brought to light complications in my family that we hadn't been dealing with for the longest time. My mother was kind of the foundation that held together that dysfunctional chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And once she was gone, I found myself feeling very broken and scared and confused. But the biggest contribution to my resurfaced grief was the fact that the one person that tethered me physically to my twin sister was gone. I no longer felt the security to the earth that only a mother of twins can provide. This person who once nurtured us as a unit was no longer there, and it left me feeling like a fish out of water. On the flip side, she'd been emotionally and mentally absent when it came to Sarah's death and for years due to her own grief and addiction struggles, which made it all the more confusing. Meanwhile, the estrangement with my siblings that already existed due to years of multiple complications became worse in the wake of all the problems and misunderstandings that surrounded my mother's death. I was extremely lonely and feeling very much like an orphan. Within the year after my mother's death, I completely walked away from drinking and made a decision to start healing. And it wasn't until after this that I realized just how much I had not dealt with my sister's death for 20 years and how many problems it caused.
Yeah, and I think particularly, as I recall you mentioning, you gravitated into drinking, and that's going to numb any type of experience of grief. And, you know, as a past addictions counselor, I worked with individuals who had delayed grief because of the fact that they were self-medicating to delay the onset of it. And then once they began to embrace sobriety, all of the feelings that occurred and the experiences of grief surfaced after they were removed from their drug of choice.
Yes. Yes, that was very much my experience. Sarah came back with a vengeance. She's like, hello, I'm still here.
Yep, I'm still here and it's time to grieve me.
Yeah.
Speaking of Sarah, and I love to ask these questions of anybody who's lost a loved one. Tell our audience about your twin sister, Sarah, what you remember most about her.
She was my identical twin. She was a very beautiful, free-spirited person. We used to call her an urban fairy because she loved to travel so much and seek out adventure. She was afraid of nothing. She'd sing opera. She was very involved in the theater. She would pose for some well-known artists and that painted frescoes and murals. She loved art, music, anything creative. She was my best friend. She was witty and so full of life, and no one can make me laugh like she did. There's no one can make me cry as much as she did. And we fought a lot because we knew how to get under each other's skin, which is very typical of twins. I miss her very much.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, I teach a death, dying, and bereavement course at Utica University, and we talk about sibling grief. I ask my students, how many of you have a brother or sister that you tell stuff to that you'd never tell your parents? And every one of them raises their hand. And that's the unique piece about the sibling relationship, is just as the parents lose that sacred relationship with their child, the siblings lose their sacred relationship with each other. And their relationship has different connotations or different significance than the parent-child bond. And a lot of times, again, that just gets swept under the rug.
Yeah, absolutely.
What are the unique challenges presented through the death of a twin that are similar and different from sibling loss? And what is the specific effect on the family due to the death of a twin?
So there's all kinds of things that can happen there. Well, first, twins find themselves in an identity crisis. learning how to navigate the world as a me instead of a we. I mean, you've grown up with this person all your life and treated as one unit. And suddenly that's not there. And you just start getting treated differently. There's a lot of survivor's guilt, extreme loneliness. You're kind of on your own island. Like, no one but a twin will understand this kind of grief. It's a very unique kind of grief. The parents of twins will ignore the surviving twins due to their own grief. And they kind of expect them to fill the void of the missing twin and always be available to them. The surviving twin's grief goes unnoticed. But then on the flip side, some twins' parents start to helicopter and become overprotective. Yeah. You can find yourself being ignored. You can find yourself being smothered. And it's pretty convoluted when you've got other siblings in the mix. Like, they've already felt secondary to twins oftentimes, and now they feel really secondary. And it took me a long time to realize that my siblings suffered a lot more than I realized growing up.
I would think that the bond that you had with Sarah, being identical twins, was quite different than just a normal sibling bond that you might have had with your other brothers and sisters. And I could see some hierarchy in that within the family, some subdivisions with that. And so it's the other question is, how do you advise parents to find balance between staying totally detached from their surviving children's grief and being the helicopter parent where they're smothering all the time? Before you answer that, as a parent who's lost a child, I can see the helicopter piece with that, because our safety net has been shattered. I mean, our world was shattered, you know, thinking that you'd never have to bury a sibling, much less your identical twin. Our worlds were shattered when we had to face the unthinkable, which is burying one of our children. We always thought our children would carry our legacy and not the other way around. So with all of that, how do you advise parents to find the balance between being the helicopter parent and being too overprotective or smothering?
That's a good question. I would say have conversations with your children and keep the communication going. Ask what the child's needs are. Make sure that they're not, you know, stepping boundaries. Checking in with each other as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. You're right. I think all of that sets the stage for setting up an environment where the surviving siblings and their surviving children can, you know, at least talk about the brother or sister that they've lost. Mm-hmm. One of the things I know that I've heard that siblings have been told is that, well, you know, you have to be good for your parents. They're going through a tough time. Don't do anything to make them more upset. Be good. And basically the message is take care of everybody else. Take care of your parents to the exclusion of taking care of yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important for parents to be able to create a safe environment to say, look, even though it seems like I may be very consumed with my grief, it doesn't mean you can't come and talk to me about your brother or sister.
Right. And I think, Dave, it also depends on the family dynamics. You know, if you've got a chaotic family that didn't already have good communication or is dealing with addiction or mental illness, it's even harder to create good communication around that. Especially in a traumatic death like my sister's, where nobody knew what to do. We just kind of existed in this chaotic existence together. So I would also say go to counseling together. Go to grief groups together. Like do something. Go to someone to help you learn how to communicate. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. In families where there are unhealthy dynamics, that type of a traumatic event or traumatic death, that's just going to rip apart whatever survival skills have kept them together. Unhealthy families do not handle sudden death or sudden crisis very well, especially if the skills weren't there to the beginning to ensure communication, respect, or developing resilience skills from past traumas, healthy resilience skills. Then you're going to get what you're going to get.
Yes, exactly. And you may agree that we're getting better as a society, we're talking about grief, but before, nobody talked about it. It was swept under the carpet, the elephant in the room.
Well, to go along with the other elephants in the room that go along with unhealthy family systems due to the dynamics of addiction or any other unhealthy behavior, families keep secrets. Don't tell anybody outside what's going on inside our house. Exactly. We don't want anybody to know because we can handle our own problems. So we don't want to bring anybody from the outside in. So there's going to be a more of a cloak to secrecy, I think, when a traumatic death occurs. It's just going to be one of the other secrets that are kept from the outside and not talked about. With grief, we got to talk about it. We need a community of support to get through it.
Yes. Absolutely.
Now, Merari Grief Coaching, and hopefully I'm pronouncing that correctly.
You are.
Good. How did you come up with the name, and what services do you provide to twins who have experienced the death of their twin brother or sister?
So I found the word Merari. I was looking for something that was about reflection for oneself, but also, you know, the twin aspect makes it more fun. Merari is the Latin word that means to wonder at or to be amazed. It is also the origin of the words, English words, miracle, admire, and marvel, where we get the word mirror from. And to me, this word means so much. When we find ourselves grieving after a major loss, we tend to lose who we are. Yes. And often the hope for any kind of happy future is diminished. And we get lost in all the chaos and complications and confusion around us, forget how to love and take care of ourselves. And our relationships tend to suffer. We feel misunderstood and isolated. For twins who've lost their twins, this experience is compounded in ways that are almost impossible to describe. When it comes to supporting twins or anybody else that has been through a loss like this, I like to help people discover meaningful ways to honor themselves while also honoring their twin or loved ones. I provide a safe, compassionate space where emotions can be expressed freely. Together, we can explore practices of self-care and strategies for communicating with those around them. Over time, we gently work towards reintegrating the presence of the lost twin into their lives. For me, this journey has been deeply personal. I often feel like I carry Sarah with me, as though I've absorbed her, and I honor her through the ways that I live.
I'm firmly a believer in that philosophy of integration and carrying our loved ones with us. As you know, we talked in the introductory conversation about my daughter and her transition to the spiritual world from the physical world, and the best parts of her I carry within me. And symbolically, I move forward with the best of who she is. I move forward with that essence in my grief and use her essence and her strong points integrated into my own personality to try to help others. So I tell people, whether I'm teaching, whether I'm doing bereavement support, you're getting a package deal, particularly if you see a lot of young energy come out. That's probably my daughter's influence. And I'm a firm believer that we move forward in grief, move through grief by remembering, as opposed to putting our grief in a little box after a prescribed amount of time that society has dictated we should grieve, burying that box and moving on as if life is just grand or normal again. And any type of loss changes the landscape of grief for us and changes the landscape of our lives and demands that we take a look at everything, our priorities, beliefs, and see what needs to be reassessed and reevaluated.
Yes, absolutely. And I encourage a nostalgic healing. When grieving has been pushed down and repressed and not dealt with, the boxes in the closet of the stuff that you've kept, like I started to go back through those things, read letters, things like that, getting to know her again, remembering that she was there, that she was very much a part of my life. And I encourage things like that and, you know, craft with them, do something tangible with them, make them into something beautiful and happy.
Yeah.
If you're the artistic type.
Well, yeah. And the other thing too, it's a way that we stay connected to our loved ones. I'm sure reading the letters that you got from Sarah, I mean, probably has brought back some really positive memories. And it's almost as like you're experiencing her in real time, just reading those letters. And an object that seems to be minor can stimulate really profound memories of you know, great times that we had with our deceased loved ones. So it's anything that we can use, letters, objects, photographs, to stay connected to our loved ones and continue to carry them with us and integrate the best parts of who they are, I think are going to help us move through grief.
And I also think it's very important, especially as twins, that we said something. This was very interesting to me and Sarah. We used to talk about death and we were so afraid of it happening. And we told each other, and this is interesting, we both wished that the other one would go first so that the other one wasn't left behind to deal with all the stuff that came with it, which, mm-hmm. you know, I won in that. And she didn't have to deal with it. We made this promise to each other that if the other one was left behind, we would do everything in our power to live a good life. Well, for the longest time, I didn't live up to my end of the deal. But I really think that that's important to remember that, you know, if we've lost their twin, we need to live our best lives for them because they're worried about us. They're fine, you know. I don't know if I'm the only twin in the world that thinks this way. I know oftentimes it can be very much the opposite, but I think that that's just very important that we do whatever we can to keep our sanity with us and work on our trauma for them.
Yep. And try to make a decision to re-engage in life with purpose, regardless of the hand of cards that have been dealt with us. And that's a process in and of itself. It took you many years to get to that point. For other individuals, it may take a shorter period of time. But when you take a look at it, time is relative. And with the movement through grief varies depending on the nature of the death, the trauma, the amount of support that you had initially, other coping strategies that you learned to deal with other crises in your home and what was modeled to you by your family. So, you know, it's going to take as long as it's going to take to get from the raw pain of grief to the point where you're going to re-engage in life again. And accept the fact that my life is going to be the way it is, that Sarah or my daughter Janine is not going to be a physical presence in my life, but they're going to be a presence. And I can accept that moving forward and re-engage in life with meaning and purpose.
Absolutely.
Twinless Twins, Internet Support Group International. I saw that referenced on your website. Tell our audience about that support group and what they do to support twins who have experienced the death of a brother or sister.
So, Twinless Twins is a nonprofit organization founded by Dr. Raymond W. Brandt, who is an identical twin. He lost his brother, I believe. He found healing by reaching out to other twinless twins. It was established in 1986, and the organization offers opportunities to reach out to other twins through virtual and in-person meetings. And they even have an annual conference. Mm-hmm. And they have a website with a lot of different resources for twins. It's basically a way you can connect with other twins. And they set it up in each region. There are different regions in the country.
So they have resources for twins. Do they also have virtual online chats or meets or meetings for twins across the country and the world?
Yes. So each region has a coordinator and they set up meetings. And they actually have different groups for twins like lost at birth, lost adulthood, lost addiction, trauma.
Even though the loss of a twin, the pain is universal, there's still unique circumstances due to cause of death that make each of those journeys unique in and of itself. So to have as homogeneous a support group as you can to deal with those intricacies or those differences or those specific issues related to cause of death, I think it's a great thing. It sounds like they've been doing some meaningful work for a long time with twins.
Absolutely. I mean, like they have one for death in utero, which is a big thing. There's a lot of twins that lost their twin in utero that are still grieving into adulthood over that. That's something that I didn't experience, and I wouldn't even begin to know what to say to another twin about that.
Yeah, that's got to be a unique kind of loss because you were a twin, but it's a twin you never met.
Right.
And so you depend on your family to kind of create that history in terms of what your twin sister or brother would have been like if they had grown up. And I imagine that as they are growing up and developing their own interests, if they're wondering, geez, if my twin had lived, would we be sharing the same things?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Many people, like over time, they've even wanted to go so far as to find where their twin was buried. If they were stillborn, they want a name, they want a date, they want something tangible. And oftentimes when it comes to that kind of death, parents sometimes don't even tell the children until later. They really sweep that under the carpet, or that becomes a family secret. But it's really important to these people to know who was my twin.
Yeah, and particularly if it was a twin that you never met, I think it's important for the family to include that twin that died in utero. Talk about the experience, what it was like, you know, carrying both of them, how mom and dad felt with everything, how dad experienced mom's joy when she was, you know, putting her hand to her stomach and hear her two heartbeats. Those kind of things that I think are so important. I think there have been situations where that has been swept under the rug. I mean, let's say a mother had a newborn death or a miscarriage, and then they had another child after that, never told the child about the newborn death or miscarriage that preceded them, and all of a sudden they found out that they had an older brother or sister that was conceived but was never born. And it's like, okay, how does that change the dynamic for me?
Yeah.
I thought I was an only child. Now I found out that I had a brother or sister that died. How does that redefine my narrative? And I'm sure that that's got to really present some crises as well, too, for those individuals who find that out very suddenly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
One of my last questions for you today, and you've left us with a lot of great information about twinless twins, about your own journey, about the unique challenges that twins face when they lose their twin brother or sister. But if there's one thing, ultimate wisdom or takeaway that you'd like to leave our listeners with today, Erin, what would that be?
Have grace with yourself. You've suffered a terrible thing, and this is something most people won't understand what you're feeling or experiencing. And for twins, I highly recommend looking into the Twinless International at the website, twinlesstwins.org. If you want to take your healing journey further, you know, reach out to a grief therapist or coach, and I would love to work with you if you'd like. The Twinless Twins International has a Facebook page too. So if you just wanted to jump on and talk to people and connect that way, that's a possibility too.
Is that a public page or private page?
It's public.
Public. Okay.
Italy.
Yeah. So if it's public, anybody can join pretty much. And then I think if it is public, I think that's a really good idea, because it gives individuals who aren't twins the understanding of the challenges that twins go through that either are similar or different than just traditional sibling grief. So, and my last question for you, Erin, that's going to give you an opportunity to promote yourself a little bit. If individuals want to get in touch with you, contract for your services, what's the best way for them to do that?
You can go to my website at MerariGriefCoaching.com, or you can email me at Erin@MerariGriefCoaching.com. Would you like for me to spell that?
You can.
M-I-R-A-R-I, Grief Coaching.
So now, if they come to you for services, will they see Tatum and Hobbs, your two cats?
You know, I'm about to update my website, so I think I'm going to put a picture of them up.
I think so too, particularly. I think they must kind of be on your board of directors as well too, I would imagine.
They are. Yeah. They kind of run the show around here.
as a cat person, they used to say it's my cat's world, and I'm just in it. But I knew that's another reason we were going to align, because you're a cat person and I'm a cat person as well too. So, but Erin, thank you so much today for just a wonderful conversation. I wish you well in the new year. I wish you much health and prosperity for you and your family. And thanks again so much for being a great guest contributor today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed this. You do such beautiful work.
Well, so do you. And together, you know, we can make the world where service, I think, becomes the rule rather than the exception. So thanks again, Erin.
Thank you so much, Dave, and you have a wonderful new year. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you too. And with that, that's a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.
Thanks so much.